And welcome to episode 29 of the Star Trek Discovery podcast. I'm Brian.
And I'm Wes.
And we'll be covering eventually season 2, episode 4, an obol for Charon. And I think I got that right.
I think you did too, Brian.
Yeah. You may have noticed that Ruthie is not here tonight. Unfortunately, she came down sick and at the last minute had to cancel. But my friend, in an emergency plea from me, Wes Huntington, has thank you for doing this and on such short notice. Really appreciate it.
No problem, Brian.
All right. Well, in case people haven't heard you on this podcast before. Wes has been on the last couple of roundtables we've done, but why don't you tell the other listeners what podcast that you do?
I do the Minnesota Star Trek Nerd Podcast. It's a twice a week Star Trek podcast, and I've been doing anything related to Star Trek. An episode I just dropped today was about my opinion about Star Trek Enterprise. So. And I've reviewed the first three episodes of Discovery Season 2 so far. And I will be reviewing this episode that will be dropping next week. So,
and I have listened to all of your episodes except for the one that you released today.
Of course.
I did not get a chance to listen to anything today. I had a very super busy day at work. But anyway, before we get started with the discussion of this week's episode, we do have some feedback for last week, but before we start, I will promise you it will not last an hour and 4 minutes. So anyway, let's open hailing frequencies. And to that end, I just want to say that I kind of mentioned this at the end of the podcast last week. We are going to try very hard to keep the episodes around 90 minutes for the rest of the season. And that's simply because I'll be doing double duty on the Walking Dead talk through with this podcast. And I don't want to kill myself just out of exhaustion. So I will not have to be editing the other podcast most weeks, but I will be editing this one. So my whole goal and the benefit to you guys is that we'll hopefully get the episodes out on Sunday most weeks, so you'll get it. They won't be 2.5 hour epics like last week, which is even that the raw recording was 3 hours and 5 minutes. So I shrank it by almost 40 minutes without really taking out any major content, but it's stuff that we can't continue to do given the schedule. So anyway, I'll shut up so that we can get going. But okay, so our first bit of feedback is from Mike in Cleveland, and I'll read this one. I'll give you a little break on the first one, Wes. But so Mike says, I personally really like this episode because it reaffirmed to me I can still trust the Star Trek franchise to tell me a story. I give this episode 9 so-called plot holes starting to get filled out of 10. In my opinion, the hater community is really going to hate this episode because Discovery told them to sit down and shut up. It was amazing how much a little hair changed the Klingon look. In TNG and DS9, we know females need special dispensation from the High Council just to sit at the head of their house. So how hard of a fall is Laurel headed towards? Indeed. I'm thinking today, Philippa saved her chancellorship, but tomorrow could be a completely different story. Get great acting out of Mary Wiseman. Tilly had me feeling all the feels this episode. All her relationships in the show feel so well-earned and believable. It was seamless how they used Pike, Burnham, Saru, and Stamets to tell their story. By the way, just in case you missed it, there's probably a good reason the Spore Drive isn't used in the future. Boy, that's another well-earned prediction there. And he got this in several days before this episode came out, so good on him. Still concerned, Spock never mentions Burnham. He didn't mention Cybok either, right? I've used that one a lot myself. Nor did he say anything about Sarek. Kirk didn't even know that Sarek was Spock's dad. I'm expecting to hear complaints about this episode because it was more like a season one than the first couple of episodes were. But I feel this was one of the most important episodes of the series. We get the rise and fall of the Klingon female, Spore Drive, what went wrong, the tragic childhood of Mr. Spock, the rise of Section 31. What's the connection between the Red Angel and Michael Burnham? So on my rewatch, I think I know what happened between Spock and Burnham. Things we know and have seen, Spock's parents are emotionally unavailable to him. Kid Spock is aware his mother shows Burnham love. Burnham is aware of Spock's awareness. Spock is treated poorly by other Vulcans. We already knew that. Mm-hmm. I think in order to forge a bond with child Spock, young Burnham gives Spock the emotional love and support he craves. I'm expecting the show to give some tender private moments and flashbacks of the two of them. Then after the extremist attack, we'll see Burnham denying Spock those moments in order to push him away for his protection. Probably finishing with a pretty brutal Old Yeller style moment. The irony is Sarek brought Michael into his home to teach his son empathy, but her love for Spock got in the way of him feeling compassion. Mm. Oh, thank you very much. Yeah, so some good points there. I don't want to go into a lot of detail reading them, but I think you are pretty close on the whole Spock and Burnham thing. I wonder, I've been thinking about this myself, and I wonder if she intentionally blamed him for the attack or something like that, or tried to say it was his fault or something like that, something to cause a lot of hurt there. But I'm still grasping to try to figure out, like, what could she have done that would have made him completely go against her forever, basically. I still haven't figured that out, but I have a feeling that very soon, as soon as Spock shows up in this series, we're gonna have a lot of these questions answered, I think. So
yeah, I agree, because that whole discussion about that kind of like what I was, how did that all, you know, work out? But like you said, Brian, I completely agree with you. By the time Ethan Peck's Spock shows up, everything will be answered. Everything will just be revealed.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Well, we've got another one from Sven from Berlin. Wes, can you read this one?
Yeah, sure.
All right.
He says, "Hi, everybody. I was unable to open GoldenSpiderMedia.com."
I should just interrupt just for a second. Yeah, there was a problem in the past week with our site going down. It's back up now. We actually moved to another hosting provider. So hopefully the problems that we were having are taken care of. But sorry about that. It shouldn't have affected the like if you get our podcast through, you know, whatever podcast client of choice. That was not affected at all. This was just the website. So, but anyway, sorry about that. Just wanted to give you an update.
All right. Here's my feedback on Point of Light. I'm afraid that I have almost no real negative points on the episode. Nothing wrong with that. And my feedback is, again, pretty much on I love this show side. I mean, the optics and set designs are brilliant, not just for TV. The characters are so well drafted and actors that can deliver on the great storytelling. Even the balance act between the stories of the different characters worked for me. This time it was Tilly and her imaginary friend, a fallback and consequence of the events of last season. I really appreciate that we have arcs that span over the entire run of the series so far, and not just an episode or two. Almost everything seems to be connected. Tilly's "I am dealing with this on my own" was just long enough to not become an annoyance. The story with Michael and her mother, and of course the absent Spock, was just more of the foundation on which the overall main arc, the search for Spock, okay, I had to, will be built throughout the rest of the season. I predict we will see Spock within the next three episodes, or just in the very last scene this year. Last but not least, Laurel and Tyra on the Klingon home planet. I guess it was necessary to come back to the Klingons, but with the other two arcs, it felt almost a little bit too much. Although the story was interesting and overall and the outcome satisfying, at least we now have the explanation for the Klingon looks, hair, etc. The battle of the two against the other Klingons felt a bit clumsy for my taste. But enter stage left, entering Emperor Captain whatever Georgiou. Great entrance, fantastic presence, and oh boy, what a ship those Section 31 guys have. Looking forward to more of those guys. I know this was anything but revealing feedback, but what can I say? This show is just what my inner Trekker, or is it Trekkie, still don't really know, was longing for all these years. So Point of Light was an easy 9 out of 10 dark, cool Section 31 ships. Take care, live long, and prosper. Sven from Berlin, Germany.
Yeah, what did you think of last week's episode, by the way?
As I said on my podcast, I thought it was an interesting experiment having the three stories.
Yeah.
Because I think Star Trek, for me, works with two.
Yeah.
So I thought three was kind of pushing it, but I'll give them credit for trying three.
Mm-hmm.
But I liked the Klingon story, and I liked the Tilly May thing, but I didn't really like the Michael Amanda story that much.
No?
No. It's just because it just didn't make a lot... To me, it just didn't make a lot of sense. If that was like, you know... That could have been its own episode.
Yeah.
It just felt kind of out of place for me. Hmm. Yeah. With the other two, yeah, definitely. It was definitely a good for that episode. So... And we got the pink blood, too, which was nice. Yeah, Klingons.
Yeah, I don't think we mentioned that last week about the pink blood. But, yeah, and in fact, I'd say the last couple of episodes especially have done quite a bit to repair things.
Yes.
And I will talk about that later on. But thank you so much, Sven. There was one thing I was going to refer to.
The ship was awesome.
The ship was awesome. And as soon as I saw it, I thought they made that from the Shenzhou Bridge.
They did.
And supposedly, yeah, apparently the way that it was designed, it was two floors. And they just like cut out the floor.
Yes.
To make this new bridge. And yeah, really cool. We've never really seen a bridge like that in the Federation. So I thought it was really cool.
And I want to say one thing. I mentioned this on my podcast.
Yeah.
Is the ship black? Is the ship black hull like the USS Vengeance was in Star Trek Into Darkness? Because that was Section 31 ship, but it was huge.
It was
black.
Yeah, it was hard to tell.
Yeah, it was hard to tell.
But I think it probably was.
Yeah, you just couldn't tell because of the sunlight was used in the shot.
Yeah. I love that Emperor, Georgiou entrance. And supposedly she was, you can see her if you're looking for her, around in the Klingon palace at other points. I think the point where Tyler thought that he was being spied upon, it was actually her. It wasn't a member of House Mokai. It was her. So,
yeah.
Thank you so much, Sven. I really appreciate it. We got another piece of feedback from actually a new contributor, Donna. So, hi, Donna. She says, I don't know if this is the appropriate place to post, but here goes. You were discussing the Tilly and May conversations as being disjointed. Like, what plan? I think Ruthie said maybe the plan was discussed off screen. I was wondering, maybe there was more to this, but it was just cut from the episode, and that's why it feels disconnected. Just a thought. And I thought it was a good thought, although I think we get a better idea of what her plan was, but in this episode, but I still don't know what the final goal is. Based on what we see at the end there. Are they trying to transform Tilly? Are they trying to? Well, the one thought was, I'll hold it until we get to the actual episode. But I did have a couple of thoughts on it.
Yeah.
We got a couple more pieces of feedback. Next one is from James. Can you read this one?
Yeah. He says, "Hey guys, just got through the half marathon.
It definitely exactly.
It definitely had to have been your longest episode to date."
It was, that, by the way.
Yeah, not that I have a problem with that, Brian. I know you're a busy man, so I'll keep this as brief as possible. Just a couple points I had. Brian, the half marathon on a starship and the group of runners together is definitely a military thing. It's another maritime tradition that descends from. There are CPT candidates who are doing the running on the starship. And in the Navy, when new chiefs are selected each year, this is part of their initiation into their rank as well. They'll have them run around the ship's weather decks outside if the ship is underway. They'll also show solidarity and teamwork by staying together in a group so there are no stragglers. Pace is kept by the slowest runner. So it definitely not something far-fetched, but definitely something you kind of have to have inside knowledge to really understand. Interesting.
Yeah, James, you're always good at bringing us the naval perspective, and I really appreciate that when you do, because that's something I don't have a lot of experience with. And it's interesting, though, that supposedly it's not far-fetched for them kind of to bunch up like that. So, interesting.
Interesting. And he goes on to say, "Another point I wanted to bring up was why May found Stamets to be terrifying. Remember, she's a mirror spore, and that mirror Stamets was a pretty awful individual, and it's not prime Stamets that she should be necessarily be talking about." Yeah, it makes a lot of sense now.
Yeah, well, it was, we thought maybe it was that, but we know better now, so it's actually... it was directed at him. So,
yep.
Anyway, okay. Our last bit of feedback is from our Twitter friend, Ken from Chicago. And I told you, Ken, that we might not be able to guarantee that we get it in, but we're going to get this one in. It's since we don't have an hour to go through, but we'll be quick here. He says, "Bladed review of Point of Light, 7 out of 10. Surprisingly widely recognized Section 31 badges." Yeah, indeed. Mm-hmm. Pros, 3 plots, all female-led. A Trek first? I don't know. It might be.
I think so.
Yeah.
I never thought of it.
Yeah. I mean, I've definitely seen that on The Walking Dead, and I've seen it on Fear, The Walking Dead, both those shows. And I've seen it on Game of Thrones, where things have been all female or mostly female. But Trek, I think that is probably new, because like you said, it's rare for them to do 3 stories in an episode, but certainly probably not 3 that are female led.
Mm-hmm.
He continues, he says, "Spock's mom being featured independent of Sarek and Spock." Yeah, I appreciated that too. And he says, "Ex-Empress Giorgio, more please." his cons, Burnham, Amanda, Tilly, and Laurel all seem to have no agency, all relying on or reacting to others. Yeah, actually, I've heard that before. People have said that Burnham is reactionary. I would think that might be true. I don't know about Tilly, though. I think that Tilly has has some kind of plan. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah. Tilly avoiding sick bay, even though she's literally hallucinating. Hashtag, that's what it's for. Hashtag, too many secrets. And he says, the plots in general were okay, no big shakes. Addendum, Spock might have kept an obsolete tablet because his mom or dad gave it to him for sentimental reasons. Huh?
Yeah.
That's possible.
It's possible, yeah.
Okay, finally to this week's episode. And what I'm going to try to do when we do this is I'll put in the notes, like in the blog post, this is when our discussion of this week's episode starts from now on. Okay, so season 2, episode 4, an oddball for Charon. Teleplay by Adam McElroy and Andrew Coville. And I should say that both Wes and I looked up how to say the title.
Yes.
Yeah. Story is by Jordan Nardino and Gretchen J. Berg and Aaron Harberts, who were, of course, the co-showrunners. I don't know when their involvement stops, if it's like next episode or the episode after that.
It is, Brian, it's next episode, Saints of Imperfection. So okay. It is, yep, it's their last one.
Okay. Yeah. And it is directed by Lee Rose. And I think pretty much all of those people have credits with Discovery before. The only one I don't think has up till now is Adam McElroy, and I believe he's a producer on the show.
So. Yeah, he is. His name is listed in the credits, and I actually looked them up, actually.
Yeah.
He's one of the writers. He was one of the writers of the Vampire Diaries on the CW.
Ah, okay.
And his first professional writing credit, believe it or not, is Halloween 4, The Return of Michael Myers.
Really?
Yeah, I looked him up on IMDb. Yeah, it's actually interesting. But yeah, all the rest of the people have been involved with Discovery either since the beginning or started this season.
Yeah, and Lee Rose, you may recognize. He doesn't work for the show specifically, but he has directed an episode from season 1. He directed episode 5.
Choose
your pain.
In fact, I just watched an episode today.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. So the description from CBS.com is as follows. A mysterious fear threatens the USS Discovery even as May, in her original form, implements a plan that puts Tilly's life in danger. Saru and Burnham's bond grows when Saru is forced to acknowledge a deeply unsettling Kelpian truth. Pike receives new intel on Spock from a loyal friend. That's was TVPG, so I guess no swear words or anything like that, although I did hear the P word.
Yeah,
by Jet Reno.
Yeah, that was kind of funny.
the PP word to make it G-rated. Yeah. Anyway, the air date, of course, was February 7th, 2019. All right. So, Wes, what did you think of an oddball for Charon?
Oh, my gosh. I had to watch it twice before. I had to watch it twice to get everything. But this was by far the most Star Trek episode of Discovery so far. It dealt with everything. You know, it pretty much is a bottle show, first of all.
Yeah, yeah.
Which makes sense because, as we all know, the first three episodes went over budget.
Yes.
So this is definitely a response to that. It is definitely their first bottle show. So ever in the series. Granted, you could call Magic Made Stainless Man Go Mad a bottle show.
Yeah.
But you can definitely, this is their first bottle show. And it had a lot. This is the most Star Trek in Discovery so far. This was great. I hope that, I just want to do this right now. If the Emmys were held today, give it to this episode. Every category whatsoever. Doug Jones, everybody, they deserve Emmy Awards for this episode.
Do you have a rating for it?
I give it 10 out of 10.
Excellent.
Yeah, because this was an excellent episode through and through.
Well, I love this episode too. I will not give it a perfect mark, but it was, I'd say, probably my favorite of the season. So I would give this one a 9.6 out of 10, and I would give it 9.6 dead threat ganglia.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't know what else to say, but or disconnected or whatever. But anyway, yeah, I thought, much like you, I would agree, most Star Trekian show so far, and it was great.
Yeah, it was. And yeah, and actually, if you really think about it, the title refers to Saru because of the whole threat ganglia falling out of him. It's rooted in Greek, in mythology, the title is, in which you cross the river, I think it's across the river Styx or something like that, and then you become a better, I think something changes in you. Well, that's what happens with Saru. Everyone, he thinks he's dying, but then when this threat ganglia fall out, he's fine. He's a changed person. I think when you really think about it, the title refers to Saru. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I definitely was with Saru. All right, well, let's get into listener ratings. I'll start with James. He gives it 10 out of 10 duct tape repaired analogies.
That was great. The whole duct tape thing with Jet Reno, that was hilarious.
Yeah.
Rick from Cleveland says 10 out of 10 analogies fixed with duct tape.
Kyle, who's my co-host on Fear the Walking Dead Talk Through, he says, I want to rewatch this again, but for now, my rating is 8.9999999 fiery interstellar peach pits.
Where did that come from?
Well, I don't know. It was kind of peach colored, I guess. Peach pit colored.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, the whole sphere thing. Yeah, it was. All right. Fred gives the episode 7.5 bottles of habanero sauce. Would have been more if number one had gotten more screen time.
Yeah, I can understand that sentiment. And lastly, Ken from Chicago gives it 9 out of 10 rolls of duct tape. All right, so let's go with the yeses.
Yes!
All right. Well, I'm going to let you read this one. It's a few of them from James here, so I'll let you read this one.
All right. Jet Reno, this woman is my new favorite character. As a sailor myself, she's a sailor in every sense of the word. And not only is she a sailor, she is also a true snipe engineer. And this is exactly how we act in the Navy. Make her cha-ching. I feel like if DS9 had this kind of freedom, this would be the female Miles O'Brien.
Just to stop you there, I think he meant chief engineer.
Oh, chief engineer. Sorry about that.
No, that's
sorry
okay. It was funny. I didn't want to. I'm going to keep that. It's funny.
Okay. Yeah, if DS9 had this kind of freedom, this would be the female Miles O'Brien. Yeah, I happen to agree. Number one completely turned the misogyny of the 60s on its ear. This woman gets stuff done and then goes and eats a cheeseburger. I want more of her. Yeah, ganglia are gone. Yes, they are.
Yes, they are.
And that's awesome. The episode in general is another example of Trek storytelling 101.
Yeah, and I'll just say that I had a couple of the same things that James had. So I love the banter between Stamets and Reno. I had mentioned this, I think, in the first episode that I thought that those two would be great together, and they were. So I love the interaction of those two and hope to hear a lot more of it or see a lot more of it.
Yeah, I felt like she was like, I'm going to say this, like she was like the Leonard McCoy of the engineering bay.
Yeah. and I'll also say that I am very satisfied and happy to see the end of the threat ganglia, because I feel like the threat ganglia were very much a problem that the show had because they were erratic. Like, why did he never feel threatened with Lorca? There were things about it that didn't seem to work. And so I'm really happy to see that they're gone. And this may be like the one thing that was preventing him from being a good captain. And now that he has evolved, maybe by season three, he will be the full captain of the Discovery. And there won't be, you know, this one captain per season, and then they have to move on to a new captain. Because I think that would get old.
Yeah, but I like that idea, too, because it kind of reminds me of the whole, what is it, the dark arts of the professor of the dark arts in Harry Potter. So I thought of that, and I like that kind of analogy. I've seen it discussed elsewhere. But yeah, I'm kind of glad that the Trek Ganglia are gone as well, because, like you said, Brian, it was kind of a handicap for the character.
Yes.
So
yeah, I agree.
It was a kind of like a big handicap, because I would agree. Why didn't he get the thing didn't pop out whenever Lorca entered the room? I don't know, but maybe because he was just too strong of a character that didn't come out. Maybe, but yeah, it was definitely a handicap. And now that he's evolved, thanks to the Ganglia being gone, oh my gosh, it's going to be an interesting what's going to happen the rest of the season, especially when they have to confront the Ba'ul.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Fred has a yes as well. And he says, it says the Babylonian Bridge.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about regarding the whole mythology thing.
The whole language thing. And I think that was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
I know that we've seen something like that. There was like a DS9 episode. I think it was called Babel, actually, where people were talking gibberish. That was kind of similar, but I liked the idea. I don't think it 100% worked, but I thought it was pretty good. But I didn't think it 100% worked, because if it was the universal translator going offline, you would have been more like what we saw on the Klingon ship. You know, they could hear the person talking English and then it would get translated to Klingon. So we didn't get that. It was very much like them talking Klingon or talking French or talking Andorian, I think, talking Mandarin. So that was, like I say, it was, I give it a B for execution of that. I liked it. I probably even put it in my yes, but I didn't think it completely worked.
Hmm.
Ken from Chicago, his yeses are as follows. Universal translator blues. More bridge crew. Jet Reno. Duct tape. Duct tape can fix that metaphor. Jet Reno is life. Number one and her awesome appetite. It goes with the shake. Burnham and Saru. So what do you have for yes?
Well, first of all, I think, from one thing, I like the fact that they're going to rip out the whole holographic communication system. I like that whole Pike thing saying, like, we got to rip the whole thing out.
I totally agree with you. I had that down myself because I just called it Enterprise Fixes, because it's like, well, we're going to rip it out. And I'm just thinking, yeah, we're going to rip out those plot points.
That made those.
It's more more excising of fuller Discovery, because I've said it on our podcast many times that I think pretty much all of the problems that we've had come right from the creator's perspective. Things that rest right on Brian Fuller, the design of the Klingons, the ships, the technology. I think all of that comes from them, and I don't expect them to completely, you know, get rid of that kind of thing. I do expect, you know, differences, but they didn't have to do everything that they did. So anyway, we've talked about this. I don't want to talk about it all through this, but I loved how that was conveniently placed in there. And it was also funny how the engineer,
what
was his name? Fouvier or something like that?
I think it was Lavoie or something like that.
Louvier.
Louvier,
Louvier. That's what it was.
Yeah.
That he said something like, you know, I can't imagine any engineer loving the Enterprise more. Of course, we know that Scotty probably loved it more.
Yeah, but the other thing I really thought was a big yes was a very unique problem. And that was when the sphere was interacting with the Discovery systems and the Universal Translator went offline. That's been a big trope of Star Trek since the beginning. And then we have the whole bridge crew talking different languages. It was great. It was a very unique problem.
Yeah.
And it's something that has never been like, you know, have a problem like that before. And that was very, very unique. I really liked that.
Yeah, I did too.
Yeah.
I did too.
Yeah, so that's my two yeses.
Well, I don't have it written down here, but I guess I would say if I was looking for another one, I'd probably say the relationship between Burnham and Saru that we got to see, that, you know, the admission of family. And if you think about it, you know, the way that they fought was kind of like, you know, a brother and sister fighting. You know, we see that in the pilot episode, like they're bickering like brother and sister would.
Yep.
On the bridge. And that's probably why what Burnham did was so, I think, devastating to Saru, because, you know, he lost Giorgio, and it was probably also like a betrayal of that friendship or that, you know, foster sistership that the two of them had, you know, that it's like a family betrayal, I guess. So it makes all the more sense. But, you know, I thought that those moments, especially at the end, were pretty touching, and that really worked for me. And I guess I'll also say Saru, we got to see more of his unusual physiology. And, you know, I heard some podcasts say, you know, oh, we got to see Saru naked. I don't really care about that, but I did think that his body makeup was pretty impressive.
Yeah, it was.
I could only imagine how hot it would be underneath that suit.
Yeah, I know, exactly. And that's probably why, what's her name, Sarah Middich is not playing Arium in season two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably similar reason. Do you have anything else?
Not really, but
okay.
Overall, great episode.
Right. Okay, well, let's go with the nose then.
No!
All right, so let's see. We first have a couple from James. He says, Tilly, somebody help her. I know she'll be okay, but I want to know what's in store for her. Okay, this isn't really a no. Yeah, kind of a hold your horses. My theory for this season seems to have been completely shot down from the sneak peek of next week's episode. Well, we won't comment on that, but yeah, well, that's not so good in terms of you not getting it right. All right. Well, we got a couple from Fred. You want to read those?
Yeah. Not enough number one.
I had this one down as well until I started thinking about why that might be. So
yeah.
And I don't know. Do you want to talk about this for a second, I think?
Yeah,
so sure. Why do you think we didn't get to see much number one? And the thing that I had down for my nose, you won't see it in the document, but I was going to mention it. They didn't give number one a name.
Oh, yeah. It didn't give her a name. No.
Yeah. So why do you think that we only saw her for cold open, you know, for, and even not even the whole cold open, just part of that first scene, I guess.
Well, I think the reason why was because of the whole Spock situation.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that was the only reason why, with the whole Spock situation. That's why she was only there for like, how long, like 2.5 minutes?
Yeah.
Roughly. But yes, we get to see her for the first time in over 50 years.
Yeah.
Which is great. I'm glad she was able to talk. She actually kind of channeled a little bit of Majel Barrett's performance.
Yeah.
When she was talking with Pike in the mess hall. So, yeah. And I was right that she was eating a cheeseburger. Everyone thought, oh, this is not a cheeseburger. But it was. Yeah. It was.
I saw the pictures of it ahead of time and like, oh, she's got a pretty big burger there.
Cheeseburger.
Okay. So I'll throw this out now. I have mentioned this already, but I think that this, above all else, is more evidence, and I'll just stake my claim to this theory right now. It's a double theory.
Okay.
So this is what I think is going on. At the end of the season, we're going to have this feeling of wanting more Pike, and yet we know that he's got to go back to the Enterprise. And Spock, who we think is going to be with the show like the second half, are going to have to go back to the Enterprise. But we want more of them, and we're going to get more of them. And they will announce after the season finale, they will tell us that the next show that they're announcing is the 5-year mission before Kirk with Spike. I almost called them Spike last week, with Pike and Spock. Well, I guess that would be the Hollywood couple. Pike and Spock makes Spike. Anyway, it'll be another series of the Enterprise, of the 5-year mission of Pike and Spock and Number One. And that's why we didn't get to find out what Number One's name is, because we won't know it until that show comes on. And I'm going to make an even bolder prediction. I know that Ted Sullivan has been kind of like, his presence on the show has been kind of like up in the air. We haven't heard much from him. I know that he co-wrote the first episode and he's still listed as a co-executive producer, but it doesn't seem like he's going to be involved with the show throughout the whole season. I think that we're going to find out that he's the creator of that show. And I'll make one more bold prediction. It's going to be episodic, just like the old TOS and the old TNG. I think that that's what they have planned. They're going to do an all-new Enterprise show with those three characters and then whoever else, and it's going to be an episodic show. There you go.
Wow. I mean, I've heard your predictions. Well, I've heard you say that before, Brian.
Yeah.
And I agree with you. I think it could happen. Yeah. But then again, it could not, too. It's up in the air. I've heard you say it before, so.
Well, I said some of it, but I didn't say all of it. But I think that this is more evidence of it. And I don't think I mentioned Ted Sullivan before. So, and if I did, well, I'm wrong. But I'll mention it again. I feel more strongly about it at this point. All right. He did have another one here.
Yeah, it says, which medical degree does Pike and Burnham have? Are they helping Dr. Pollard? Is this to give him some action during the discussion about measurements against the virus? Awkward.
And I know has a medical background. I know that he teaches medical students. I don't know if he's a doctor or a scientist exactly. Fred, I'm sure you will tell us next week, but I do know that, like, Orphan Black, he was very fascinated with because of its content that, you know, was right in his wheelhouse, so to speak. So anyway, I hadn't thought of it, but once I read this, I thought, yeah, that did kind of happen. So I don't really know what the function there was. It's something else I noticed, speaking of Pollard, I noticed that Wilson Cruz is not on the credits anymore. So I assume he's coming back, but he definitely was not on the credits. And I'd have to go back to see if he's been on the credits the two episodes previous to this.
No, he hasn't.
He hasn't been.
No.
So does this mean that Pollard is the CMO, or is it still some unknown medical officer that we haven't met yet? And we definitely know that we don't know who the chief engineer is yet, because Reno mentioned that she got sent to the engineering lab by the chief engineer. So it's not her either.
No.
So.
Yeah. Considering that Power's been in since episode 14 of season 1.
Right. We never saw her before that.
No, we didn't. Actually, wasn't she in... Oh, gosh. Wasn't she in Vaulting Ambition 2 from episode 12, I think? I'm not sure.
You know what? I think you're right. I think she was. Yeah.
Yeah, I think she was in Vaulting Ambition too. So,
yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know. She probably could be now. Like,
yeah.
I think they're trying to introduce the chief engineer, CMO, probably separately. Maybe Pollard is now the CMO of Discovery. So,
yeah.
I don't know.
And Ken from Chicago, his no's are, I don't care for that large Times Roman font for subtitles. Tahoma, Verdana, Calibri, or Seago UI, please. Hashtag fonts FTW. Yeah, I have to admit that those fonts are not a favorite of mine either. Now, I don't know if these current episodes are showing that font on Netflix, but I believe that at least for season one of Netflix, they weren't using those fonts. They actually had a different font. He continues, he says, not enough number one. Hashtag more, please. And that we already talked about. Hasn't Tilly suffered enough? Now she's was a weird, friendless child? Thumbs down. Well, I don't know. I tend to think that's not a stretch. Because she's awkward. At least she was awkward. Certainly she was in the season premiere. Need to hear bridge crew's names more, please. We heard him a little bit, but all right. Do you have any no's?
Well, the whole Saru lying about the whole, what's it called? Vaharan? What do you call it? He lied Vahari about
Vaharai or something like that?
Yeah, Vaharai. Yeah. Him lying about it, it was kind of like, okay. Because he lied about it, saying that he had a cold, and then he eventually comes to the truth that, yeah, he was dying. I didn't really like that too much. You know, be truthful for the first. Be truthful.
Yeah.
You know, I've always found Saru to be a very truthful character. And for the first time, actually deceiving everybody with how he was actually feeling was kind of a no for me. So.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It's kind of
out there.
Yeah, short-sighted, whatever.
Or him, or him being a little bit up, but arrogant towards the rest of the bridge crew when he said, "Am I the only one who studied the foreign language?" It was kind of a little bit off-putting there. It was funny. It was funny, but I think it was a little bit presumptuous. You know, yeah,
yeah, and you know, it's like, what about the communications officer? He doesn't know. Who the heck is the chief of security? By the way, that's what I want to know.
Yeah, I know, because it was whoever sat in her seat. The security seat was Nan.
Yeah.
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 Speaking of Nan, did you notice that she actually wore like a skirt? Like one of those mini skirts of the Discovery uniform?
Really? No, I didn't notice that.
It was there for like less than 10 seconds, but I guess Trek Corps had noticed it and put up on their Twitter feed this afternoon. And I thought this was... Wow. The first time in the Prime universe, we actually see like a miniskirt variation of the Discovery uniform. Cause we had the miniskirts for the Mirror universe, but not for the, Prime universe.
Yeah.
So
I didn't notice that.
It was there for like 10 seconds.
Yeah.
So it was, you had to like really look out for it. And it was another no for me. I have another no, Brian.
All right.
The whole slug thing in engineering, that was kind of disgusting. it was like a pile of dog poop. To me, it did. It was kind of disgusting. Yeah, that's just me.
Yeah. Let me think. Cause, like, definitely, I was expecting number one to be named. I was definitely expecting that. And it was only when I figured out that maybe it was another indication of an Enterprise show that I kind of felt better about it. But that was, I guess, my biggest negative. I enjoyed the episode very much. So I don't really have anything negative to say. I agree with you that it was a very Star Trek episode, much like the second episode was.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't really been following to see what, you know, the haters said about this episode, but I don't know. I think that there's a lot to really love about this. And I was surprised. I was on Rotten Tomatoes at one point today. And at the time when I read it, when I looked at it, I should say, it was only at a 50% of critics liked it. So I thought that was kind of surprising.
Yeah, because that's surprising, because I read TrekCore's review of the episode and they praised it.
Yeah. I think the ones that had responded to it on Rotten Tomatoes had said, like, or I was looking at one of the negative reviews on that website, and basically people said, you clearly don't know Star Trek. Just looking at it now, it is the lowest rated of the four right now, at least on Rotten Tomatoes, for critics. That's all it is, because we know that the haters are taking over things like this, of course. But
yeah,
97% critic for Brother, 94% for New Eden, 85% for Point of Light, and 73% currently for An Obel for Charon. But I think that's better than it was, because originally when I first saw it, it was 40% and went up to a 50.
Oh.
Yeah,
oh.
I know.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Ouch. Because, like I said, I thought this was the most Star Trek of the series so far.
Yeah. And
presented a problem, fixed it, and, you know, had some heart and definitely a lot of character development.
Definitely. I totally agree with you. All right. Let's move on to our favorite character.
Yeah.
Hello, this is Captain Tilly. What the heck? Hell. What the hell? Hold your horses.
Never get tired of that. Never will.
No.
All right. Well, we just got one hold your horses from the listeners. We got one from James. He says, so was it just that Saru needed some zit cream and was growing hair in places and other stuff that goes with puberty? Has no Kelpian ever reached full maturity? This goes back to The Brightest Star, and another reason I really didn't like this short. The Kelpians brought to be called in this short didn't appear to be sick at all, to have felt the call to be called. Although this makes me think, are the Ba'ul maybe not actually the Predator, but the actual mature Kelpian? Just something that kind of crossed my mind as I reflected. I've heard that theory being bantied about before, and I don't know, it could be, but I think before the end of the season, I think we're going to get more insight about the Ba'ul and the Kelpians for that matter.
Yeah, definitely. And that actually is a theory I haven't heard before.
Oh, no?
So, no, I haven't. But I've always imagined, I mean, since The Brightest Star, I've always imagined the Ba'ul are like people who are blue-skinned, like hardcore blue-skinned, not like Andorian blue, but like really, really blue skin, and are big, and they have like a mask over their faces so they don't see them. So I've always imagined that. I hope I'm wrong about that. But I never thought of that way. It could be a mature Kelpian. I don't know. I never thought of it that way. That's the first time I've ever heard of it, Brian.
Yeah. So did you have any hold your horses?
For me, I thought the whole trying to communicate with the Spore was a little bit hold your horses there. It was a little bit too quick to try to get them to talk to the Spore.
Well, I have something related. They drilled a hole in Tilly's head.
Yeah.
That I thought was definitely hold your horses.
Yeah. And they had, it was effective, but I think it was a little bit too fast.
Yeah. And that seemed to be a pretty thick drill bit to be drilling her with.
Yeah.
Wasn't a thin drill bit or anything. It was, you know, there was no anesthetic or anything like that, but
no, I know,
you know, maybe the organism kind of helped with that. But
did you notice that Stamets asked Tilly what's her favorite song?
Yes.
And it was a David Bowie song.
Well, not only that, it was a song that they actually sang on Carpool Karaoke.
Yeah, it
just
was.
This past week. Yeah.
Yeah, it was. And it was great.
Yeah.
But then I also want to mention this. Earlier in the episode with Jet Reno says, "Oh, I was dreaming I was drumming with Prince."
Oh, yeah.
And that, like, popped my ass out because I'm from Minnesota and Prince was from Minnesota.
Right.
So I was like, yay, right. Way to go for a Minnesota reference right there. So
yeah, in fact, she didn't say, but she was wearing a raspberry beret.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
That was probably too obscure. But
Anyway,
yeah, my hold your horses, I would say, had to do with the fact that this is why the spore drive goes away. I will say that Mark, in his feedback from last week, nailed it. And I even told him that earlier today, that he absolutely nailed it. Because that was something that, for whatever reason, I did not glean from the episode until I heard him say it. And then I went back and watched it again. And it's like, oh, yeah, that's what this is. He's got to be right about it. And sure enough, that it was. But it reminded me of the episode with the TNG where basically warp drive is polluting the space. And it's a similar kind of thing with that. It's that, you know, the Federation will adhere to those, you know, speed limits, so to speak, but the Romulans won't, the Cardassians probably won't, the Borg definitely won't, you know, any of the races that we know wouldn't abide by it. And it's a similar kind of thing with the spore drive. Not that anybody has the technology of the spore drive, but I would think that if they ever did, they wouldn't care.
Oh, no, of course not. And I want to remind you of this. I read Trekcore's review of this episode, and they mentioned the scene between Captain Janeway and Captain Ransom in Equinox Part 1. Okay. Regarding that they were trying to enhance, the X-Wings was trying to enhance their warp drive by killing these creatures that were from another realm in order to get their antimatter that was part of their remains in order to get home faster. And that was, they mentioned the confrontation between Janeway and Ransom in the briefing room. That whole thing about if we stop becoming our principles, we stop being human.
Yeah.
And they mentioned that particular scene, and that's probably, I actually happen to agree with that, that that scene popped into my head when they were talking with the Spore,
right?
And through Tilly. So I knew something was going to happen. I'm glad that my theory was proven wrong, by the way. I said on my podcast that I thought the Red Angel life forms were the life forms in the Mycelial Network and the Federation is polluting their space.
Yeah.
I am so glad I was wrong. I am so glad I was proven wrong. Because now the Red Angel thing is going to be a surprise to me. So I'm happy.
Anyway, the only other hold your horses, I guess you could say, is that it was just another kind of stalling episode where we don't get to see Spock again, which I don't really have a problem with, but I would like them to get to Spock. But like I say, I don't have any major issues with this episode. So, all right. So let's move on to our regular feedback section and open hailing frequencies again. All right. So we got three voicemails tonight. So the first one is from a new caller, Jenny.
Hi, this is Jenny, and I'm from Cincinnati, Ohio, and this is for the Star Trek Discovery podcast. I have a theory that the Kelpians are an infant race and that culling isn't a culling, but an evolution. Kind of off the top of my head, you know, don't know where I'm going with it, and I'm interested to see how this works out, that they have this secondary life cycle, and that the entities who are taking them are actually Kelpians, and that would explain why Starfleet didn't interfere, because it's all part of their own life cycle. I'm really enjoying the podcast. Thank you, guys. Bye.
Oh.
Well, thank you so much, Jenny. We definitely have to give you, for us, a first caller, our showcase award. Anyway, so thank you so much, Jenny, for your voicemail, and short but sweet, and we appreciate that. That kind of reminds me of the TNG season 3 episode 25, which is titled Transfigurations, but I most remember that for being the episode before The Best of Both Worlds.
Yeah.
But it had a similar kind of story where the that one being was who had like amnesia. He was actually evolving to like another stage in their life forms, you know, evolution.
Yeah.
So it's similar to that in a way. And this is kind of the thought that was brought up, you know, about whether or not these Kelpians or the Ba'u are actually Kelpians. That was, I don't know if that's been mentioned yet. That was mentioned.
That was mentioned in the Hold Your Horses.
Just by now by James. Yeah. So that's a similar kind of thing. I don't know whether or not, I think the main reason why the Federation wasn't involved had to do with the fact that the Kelpians were a non-warp species. So in general, the position is that if it's a civilization that has not discovered warp drive, that the Prime Directive, or as it's mentioned here, General Order 1, is maintained. So that's, I think, the main reason why. But I don't know. We'll have to see. Uh-huh. My interest is piqued.
Yeah, definitely. Jenny had a great theory there, and I'm looking forward to seeing that too.
This was one of your favorite short treks, right? Was it not?
Yeah, it is. Brightest Star and Runaway were my favorites.
Yeah, and I think Runaway was your favorite, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So beyond that, do you have anything you want to add to Jenny's?
No, but I thought along the same lines you did, Brian, regarding that episode of TNG written by Rene Echevarria. So, I've watched the episode probably a year ago, and now when you brought that up, Brian, I have to watch it again.
Yeah. Rene Echevarria, I will say, is the guy that took my DS9 pitch. The one that was actually bought. So I pitched to him directly a few times for Deep Space Nine. So,
yeah.
And he's also the one that told me that we're finally going to buy it. So, because originally I pitched that story in December of 1994. And it was actually the first time that I pitched to Deep Space Nine. And the funny thing is, I pitched to Voyager before I pitched to Deep Space Nine, and I pitched to Voyager twice before the show ever aired. And that was so weird.
Yeah, that is so weird.
Yeah. But, you know, they were taking pitches, and, you know, I had the pilot script, I had the show Bible, and it was based on that I, you know, and I believe originally the Bible that I originally got, you know, mentioned not Catherine Janeway, but what was her original
name? Nicole Janeway?
Nicole Janeway, yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Nicole Janeway.
Yeah. I am so glad that they didn't go that way.
Oh, no. Now, when I think about it, not to diss Voyager, but I'm glad that Jean-Vive Vigil did not do the series.
Yeah, I don't think it would have worked. No. Definitely wasn't a good fit.
No, definitely. And everyone else fit just fine. It's just not Jean-Vive Vigil. Not to diss Voyager there. But hey, that's pretty cool, Brian, that you actually did that stuff. So.
Yeah. All right. Well, we've got another voicemail, this time from our good friend, Mark.
Hey guys, Mark from Ontario, Canada here, sending in my feedback for An Abode for Charon. I give this episode 8.5 sticks of grape gum. Now, I love that the Universal Translator was going haywire, and I actually turned on closed captioning for it. So for those of you who aren't sure, here's the breakdown of the languages. Michael started off speaking Klingon, then Pike French, then Detmer Andorian, Owo Norwegian, Pike German, Nahan spoke Italian, Bryce spoke Welsh, Pike was speaking Hebrew, then Michael spoke Mandarin, which Saru replied to her in Mandarin, then Michael spoke Spanish, and finally Saru spoke Wolof to the computer, and the computer replied in Wolof. Then we heard this computer speaking French, and then multiple languages all at once, before everything was restored. And then later, when Michael and Saru were fixing the unit, they were speaking Russian to each other. Now, just a fun little piece here. When the computer was actually speaking French, what it said was, failure detected in Universal Translator Program. Now, my turbolift up moments for this episode. I loved it when Pike said, I don't think the Enterprise will ever have a chief engineer more in love with his ship than Louvier, which is so funny because we know that every preceding chief engineer loves the ship just as much. I also love the brief glimpse we got of Number One. I really wish we get to see more of her. Now, my turbolift down moments. Although I liked the references, Reno saying that she had a dream that she was playing drums for Prince and there was doves in a parade, and then later Tilly saying her favorite song was David Bowie's Space Oddity. I hate to say it, but that almost felt like the Orville for me, because that's the show I expect to have references to the music that we know. And as for Hold Your Horses, how is it that Saru was able to reply in the languages he was spoken to? When he walked on the bridge, Michael spoke to him in Mandarin, and then Saru replied in Mandarin. Later, when Michael spoke Russian, Saru replied in Russian. Now, I understand the fact that Saru could probably understand the language, but I just don't understand how he was replying in the same language. And I don't understand the part that when they said that everyone that speaks Earth English can now communicate, does that mean that even though they were all speaking English before, the Universal Translator was translating it into different languages that they didn't understand? And if that's the case, what's stopping them from hearing the other person actually talking without the translator interfering? Why couldn't they understand each other? I don't get that. Now, I absolutely love Jet Reno and Stamets together. I could watch an entire episode of just those two. And it's nice to know that they still use duct tape that far in the future. I guess there truly is no way to improve on it. And the fact that Reno asked for gum so that she can actually use it in her repair work, I thought that was hilarious. Now, I have to say something, and this might be a little bit controversial, but I wish Saru had died. Now, let me explain. I thought that the Saru story was so beautiful. The whole arc of it was seamless. He got sick. He came to terms with it. He overcame his weakness. He saved the day. He opened up to Michael. The whole bridge crew standing up as Michael led him away. It was an absolute beautiful story arc. Now, don't get me wrong. I love Saru, and I'm happy that he's still alive. But that whole storyline that was so beautifully written and filmed, I find is diminished by the fact that Saru survived. But I must say, even though he seemed better, and of course he was concerned with his people living a lie, I am concerned now that he doesn't feel the fear anymore and he felt powerful, that we may see an episode in the future where that lack of fear and that sense of power may cause some problems. Although I have to say, I really don't understand this whole Bahare symptoms that he had. He said the people were either culled or they went mad. Well, where was the madness? I didn't understand that part. Did nobody else's ganglia on his planet ever fall off and then them feel better? I just didn't understand any of that. And as for the whole Tilly story, wow, I can't wait to see more. And Brian, I guess you have a new no clip to add to your repertoire. Mark from Ontario, Canada, out.
I will have to get that clip, Mark. I didn't have time to prepare it for this week, but I will have to include it in the repertoire, like you said.
Yep.
A few things that I wrote down during listening to your voicemail. I was curious when Saru mentioned that as long as they can speak Earth English, you should be able to communicate. Well, how come it's called Earth English now? It's not Federation Standard?
Yeah, that was a little bit weird. Because Pike had said it two episodes ago.
Yeah, so I wonder if that was like a bit of discontinuity or that Earth English is Federation Standard. I don't know, but I thought that was a little weird, possibly a hold your horses for me. But there was something else that he said there about the Universal Translator. That's why I thought essentially that it was, you know, it wasn't a home run, that thing. I thought it was really cool, but there were some clunkiness things about it. Like, for example, there were a lot of Earth languages spoken there. There were very few non-Earth languages, and I would think that there would be a lot more, you know, non-Earth languages than Earth languages. But I heard, you know, everything from Italian to German to French to Welsh to Mandarin, you know, and I'm sure there were a bunch of other things as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I heard Andorian, Klingon.
First time I've ever heard a Trek, by the way, for Andorian.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Tau Ceti, which I don't know if that was actually spoken or if that was simply, you know, mentioned. And I think there was a little bit of Saurian in there because I did hear some pops and clicks as well. So, by the way, I kind of liked Linus this episode. He certainly had, and that was what I was thinking when it looked like Saru was going to die. Maybe Linus would become the token alien on the show, or very alien. And as far as Saru, I thought, despite knowing that Saru shows back up in the trailer, it seemed like he was going to die there. I mean, I was like thinking, well, they're not really going to kill him, right? But right almost until the end, I thought, yeah, they're going to kill him, or it looks like they might kill him. So I get what Mark said about him wishing that Saru would have died, but in a way he did die. The scared part of him died. All the bad parts of him died, so to speak. Yeah. I think he can be a much more effective captain now, because if you recall, what was it, The Enemy Within from TOS?
Yep.
It was, you know, which is kind of, that episode in general didn't quite work, but I got the gist of it, that it was like you need to have the negative and the positive to be an effective captain. And if you're too nice or too compassionate, you lack decision making. And I think in the case of Saru, he could lack being bold or being courageous over being, you know, fearful and avoiding. And although we saw him grow, I don't think it was a fully 100%, but now he can be the captain that he was destined to be. And I want to see that. I'm hoping that there won't be another, you know, captain of the season. And in season three, he will be captain. And for you doubters and haters, you're probably not listening to us, but
yeah.
But clearly, you know, the Saru is, I think that he will be an effective captain. What I was trying to say is that the haters, of course, are trying to say that the show is going to be canceled. And I think that's total hogwash.
But yeah, I know. I agree 100%. And I just want to say this, Brian. The whole scene was regarding Saru telling Michael, please cut off my ganglia and stuff like that. It reminded me a lot of Worf asking Riker to kill him.
Yeah.
In that TNG episode, Ethics.
Yes.
It reminded me very much like that.
Yeah. And I wondered, it's good that you mentioned that, because I wondered with her, you know, doing that, I mean, would she be charged with murder or, you know, assisted suicide or something like that?
I don't know.
I was a little concerned about her if she had gone forward with it, but thankfully, you know, she didn't. But But
yeah, she barely touched them and they fell off.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I did also take note of a couple of things that he said about lack of fear becoming a problem. Certainly if there's a lack of balance, that could be. The madness thing, we need to understand if that's true or not. And if it's, that could be like a, you know, an old wives' tale, so to speak, like just legend. And maybe that's not true at all.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't know, but, or maybe the madness is considered to be mad because they don't fear anything. Maybe that's what it means to be mad in Kelpian, you know, society, so to speak.
Mm.
Anyway, do you have anything else you want to bring up with Marx?
No, he actually, like I said before, Andorian was spoken for the first time ever in Star Trek, ever.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I don't think it was ever spoken in Enterprise, because with Shran, and the first time they meet Shran and stuff like that, it was never spoken then.
Right.
But this is the first time we actually heard Andorian in Star Trek ever.
Yeah.
Which is a good thing.
Yes, definitely. All right. Well, again, thank you again, Mark, for your voicemail. Of course, you have a long-standing tradition of getting...
Come on down.
Yep. All right. And we are... about to give another one for he. I gotta say, Fred, you are really turning the creative with these voicemails lately. And of course, the images that you see on the blog post, they are coming from Fred. He's the one who's finding these things. So kudos to him on that. You can, if you ever want to see them, you can just go to Star Trek Discovery Podcast, and you'll see when you click on the individual episodes, you'll see that some of them, especially last week, I posted, I think, 13 images. I think there's a lot of them. So I don't think I'll be doing that many this time. But anyway, so thank you, Fred, in advance. But this time I got to listen to his voicemail ahead of time. And yet again, he is going for the creative award. All right, let's hear it.
Hello, Brian and Rosie. This is Fred from the Netherlands with some feedback for Star Trek Discovery Season 2, Episode 4. You really had to reduce the length of the podcast, so I will do my best. You said 3 minutes and a max 5, so I will take the average of 4.
Run checklist protocol. I'm hearing considerably fewer syllables out of you than normal. I know the chair can be intimidating, but...
Tilly? Answer, Captain Pike.
No, I'm not listening to you anymore. You tricked me and you lied to me.
Ensign Sylvia Tilly.
Ensign, what is going on?
This one I re-edited a little bit. It's not in the original order, and I left May out. Last podcast, Mark had an idea why the spore drive isn't used anymore. And we see here that he could be right.
Well, I do believe we've just witnessed the beginning of the end of the spore drive and why it's never mentioned again in a future Star Trek series. I think we're going to find out that using the spore drive is somehow hurting or damaging the mycelial network. And since Starfleet is against the harming of any intelligent species, they're going to mothball the spore drive for good.
Also, listen to yourself here.
In the end, I have to try to put away that, like, hey, I got to explain the spore drive and just let them tell us. But I think that, you know, part of my theory last week, I think they're going to show us that either it's not going to work anymore or there's going to be a definite reason why they can't use it anymore. And it'll just shut the door on it once and for all.
Yeah.
I had a complete other idea. My idea was it is a kind of organism and it could be infected and it could die. Well, and the simplest way of not having any spore drives in the future, and it will become canon, if the whole mycelium network dies, extinct, and nobody will ever think of a spore drive anymore, because it's not there. Imagine if we don't have any petrol, and in 100 years, who would think of cars with combustion engines? Nobody anymore, because that fuel is not there anymore. So that was my idea, how the simplest solution would be. But yeah, as righteous as the Federation is, of course, we are going to respect this kind of life form instead of extincting it, and then it's solved for canon. The biggest no I have for this episode is that Rebecca Romijn, actually called Romijn because it's a Dutch name, had such a small part in this episode. I hope she will really come back. I loved her in the role she had in The Librarians and was very disappointed that series ended and was very happy that she would come back in Star Trek. And now she only has been seen very shortly in the beginning and in a very, well, grumpy is perhaps not the right word, but there was only, as you know, I take screenshots. I think only one fraction of a second that she did smile a little bit when she was in the transporter room and just arrived. So I hope we'll see more of her and more interactive. Of course, there were very emotional, very nice scenes between Burnham and Pike and between Burnham and Saru, of course. And it was also nice to see Reno back. And we still didn't get our Spock here. So probably next episode. And as said, I hope we will see number one a little bit more. When I watched the very last shot of the episode where Reno and Stamets are looking into this creature, I got a very Strangest Things feeling looking down this hole. I wish you all the luck, Brian, in managing this podcast and keeping it shorter than the last one. And a lot of... Okay, Rosie, you're right. Time's up. 4 minutes. Bye.
Well, first of all, thanks, Fred.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's really funny. I'm wondering if I should start calling Fred's voicemails the Star Trek Discovery Podcast News Hour.
Maybe you should.
Maybe I should. Although, you know, that might encourage an hour voicemail, which I don't want to encourage that. But no. Neither Fred in making one or us in playing one. But anyway, it's funny. It's really funny to hear yourself, and for that matter, to hear the podcast coming back on you, because it's like, hey, that wasn't in this week. but yeah. Anyway, so hopefully, so far, at least with this one, we seem to be quite a bit shorter. Maybe not as short as I would like, but there's still, we're pretty good this time around, it seems. Is there anything you wanted to say about his voicemail?
Well, I think we already mentioned most of his yeses and noes. It's actually okay. Rebecca Romijn, but I just want to assure everybody, she will be back.
Yeah. We will definitely see her back. Even if I'm wrong about my prediction, I would guarantee that she will be back before the end of the season.
You don't get an A-list celebrity like Rebecca Romijn in a major franchise, and she's only there for 2.5 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I'd say that she's an A-list, but she's certainly not C-list.
Yeah, definitely.
She's a known name, and you know, she's been in genre TV with The Librarians and genre, you know, the X-Men, especially. So yeah, I mean, she has the resume and the chops. So I am looking forward to seeing more of her, and I'm pretty much certain that we will see her.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, let's move on to the written feedback. And this first one is from Rick from Cleveland. Wes, why don't you take this one?
All right. He says, this episode had all an old school encounter at Farpoint style mystery with a new life form. Yeah, I see that.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Good point. I defy the haters to say this isn't Trek. Reno once again is a huge yes, sarcasm, and wit. She needs to become a permanent part of the crew. The bit with the failure of the universal translator was fun and well directed. Saru's death story was touching, and I look forward to the debate we will see soon on how he might share the truth with his fellow with his people. The coming ling of things was unexpected and satisfying, as Saru and the sphere led to a change of heart from Michael towards Spock. Tilly is always great. Tilly and Reno with Stamets as the straight man, no pun intended. That's just an absolute delightful dynamic on screen. On the sphere, I wonder how long it will be before there is some clue about the Red Angel in the 100,000 years of history it recorded. it was good to see number one, though seeing her just call her just that is just as awkward now as it was in the cage. I do want to see more of her and learn more about her ways of getting information. The only thing I'm a little bit disappointed in is how the mycelial network seems to be evolving, damaging life forms within the network. It's a bit too predictable and convenient way to retcon the spore drive out of Starfleet. We eventually see something similar in TNG where, like you said, Brian, high warp speeds get regulated due to environmental dangers. Thanks as always for the work you do in bringing us this podcast.
Well, thank you so much, Rick. I think that it, first of all, definitely was, you know, the first time that we've seen number one. I know she's been in several different novels, but this is her first appearance. Surprised that there's a couple of characters, like especially Pike and number one, that could have been in the Mirror Universe for all we know. Who knows? I don't really want them to go back. I mean, I'd love the Mirror Universe episodes, but if they did, maybe those two would be involved. I don't know. But yeah, it's surprising that such an iconic character, a character that we still know very little about. We know that she likes hot sauce.
Yeah,
she likes spicy food and she likes burgers. So we know that part. But other than that, we already knew that she's a very capable officer and that the two of them agree. So I'm very curious to know. I hope that they go with something like your Majel Una, like you had said. I think that would be good, but who knows at this point.
I'm rooting for it, though. I'm rooting for it.
Yeah.
And I thought this was cool. She is very sneaky about how she gets her information.
Yeah.
Very, very sneaky. And that's something that we have never seen before out of that character.
Yeah. We knew that she was a capable officer, and I imagine she's very calm and cool and collected. Very, you know, she's somewhat reserved, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, again, that was, I think that her portrayal was very correct to the what we know about the character. I wish that we had seen more. I know we will see more. I was really expecting to hear the name. I was just like the one thing, but then they're like, oh, come on, they're not going to say her name. And then I started thinking about why we wouldn't see her name. And then I got excited about it. But
yeah,
at the moment, I was disappointed. Just looking, the commingling of themes, I thought was actually pretty good here. I liked the Michael and Saru family. And I liked that he made her promise that she would try to repair things with Spock. That won't explain why, of course, Spock never mentioned her, but I am so very curious to see what they're going to do with that. So, All right, well, let's move on. We got about three shorter pieces of feedback, so I'm going to take all of those.
All right.
First is from my co-host of the Fear of the Walking Dead talk through, Kyle. He says, was it me or did that have a different feel to the entire episode? I enjoyed it, but it felt just a little off. More to come. I don't know if he meant more to come because he was planning to write a little more or more to come as, I don't know, more to come. I don't know, but I don't know. I thought it felt very Star Trek-y. You know, again, I'd say the second episode of the season where it felt very much like an old Star Trek story yet told in this serialized era. So it had ties to the search for Spock.
Yeah.
And of course the whole thing about the red signals. It's now a couple of episodes since they've encountered a red signal, so I'm hoping they're going to get to one pretty soon. I know that there are seven, so they still have five to find. So let's get a move on, shall we?
Yeah.
All right. The next one is from Todd. He says, okay, has anyone thought that a version of Discovery could be in the center of the sphere 100,000 years trapped in the past? Would that make sense with that short trek with fancy face? I think he means funny face. And the Vedrache, leave our Tilly alone, you mycelial. Sorry, I almost said a bad word there. Or rather, when Stamets was in Fungi land, let our Tilly go. And he says, of course, this is Tilly's favorite song. And he put a link to David Bowie's Space Oddity.
Yep.
And of course, that's, you think of Ground Control to Major Tom, but it's called Space Oddity.
Yep.
John McGrail, who was actually on our last roundtable. Hi, John. He says, hashtag Reno Stamets 2020. Then he says, Brian and Ruthie can fix this podcast with duct tape anytime. Yeah, I got to use. Well, unfortunately, like I said, Ruthie is out sick tonight. So hopefully she'll be back next week. But like I said, with the schedule, I need to keep recording Friday night or very at the very latest, maybe Saturday morning, or else I'll never get caught up because Walking Dead's on Sunday, and then I got to record that Monday or Tuesday, and you know, then the cycle just keeps going. So
yeah, I
do
understand.
I am married. I do have a family life, and you know, I'm spending way too much time podcasting as it is right now. All right. Well, you want to read James's feedback now?
Yeah, sure. He says, I absolutely love this episode and it is my new favorite. It had everything and was classic Trek. It seemed like a mashup of TNG's The Inner Light and Star Trek IV The Voyage Home without a flute or malts. Malts wasn't in The Voyage Home, you say? Well, where the heck was he? What happened to Maltz between Search for Spock and The Voyage Home people? We're talking about John Larroquette / Dan Fielding here. I want to know. Anyway, it was in The Inner Light that the being wanted to be remembered, and that The Voyage Home, and that creatures yelling and screaming, its story seemed hostile and was destructive without understanding its form of communication.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see your point.
Yeah.
I see that.
Yeah, the Inner Light similarities there too. I hadn't thought of that, but good point, James.
Yes, definitely. And definitely The Voyage Home with the whole hostile thing, you know. Pike thought it was hostile.
Yeah.
Yep. So then he goes on to say, have I said how much I love Jet Reno? Jet's awesome. She can make do with what she's got and fix stuff, and she has the attitude and self-confidence to match. She's straightforward and doesn't care about your feelings. She's going to tell it like it is. Yeah. For a brief moment, the mini arc with Saru's character had me questioning whether or not they were going to kill him off. I was like, nah, they can't be doing that. He's the main character. But then I thought, oh man, does Doug Jones have like big projects coming up and he just needs to take leave of the show? And they literally killed off Culbert. They just made do it. Then the ganglia fell off, and I was like, okay, cool. Love that Tilly's favorite song is Space Oddity, and I love the show pays tribute to Bowie. He's my absolute favorite artist, and I know that they put that bit in just for me. And we're definitely going to be seeing the Spore Drive come to an end this season, too. No way Starfleet is going to allow the network to be ravaged by travel through it once May's revelation comes to light. Oh, and Far Out, man. Not only the sports are the mushroom superhighway, but they're magic mushrooms as well. Yeah, they were.
Yeah.
I love that little high scene they got there. Cue Iron Butterflies in a Gaia de Vida. Oh, and did I mention that Jet, you know, my new favorite character? Yeah, cue Iron Butterflies in a Gaia de Vida with that. Definitely with that scene with Stamets and Reno. They're like, whoa, you look different.
Yeah, that was pretty trippy.
Yeah, it was. It was rather trippy.
Yeah. We also got a little bit of feedback from Ken from Chicago. He says, we get more hints why the hashtag Spore Drive will disappear, unlike Federation cloaking. I don't think it's voluntary. Now, we know what happened to the holographic displays, which is, he gives a link to Sci-Fi Wire talking about Captain Pike ordering them to be ripped out of the Enterprise. And yeah, I bought that. I just it didn't have to be really plausible. I just bought it. So, all right. Well, that is it for our feedback. Any other observations you want to make about this episode?
No, I don't have anything else, but that was great. I didn't really think of both, like James's comment. I did not think of both the Inner Light and the Voyage Home. So,
yeah. All right. Well, let's play our news segment, Shipwide Announcement. All right. Well, we kind of mentioned it earlier, but Sinequa Martin Green, Doug Jones, Mary Wiseman, and Anthony Rapp did an episode of Carpool Karaoke, which is available on your Apple TV app. It's free, so you don't need Apple Music or anything like that to watch it. It's free of charge. I watched it on my iPad. It's actually pretty good. I've never watched Carpool Karaoke. I've heard about it, but I thought it was pretty good. Did you get a chance to watch it?
Yes, I did. I actually watched it on my iPhone. And it was phenomenal. I absolutely loved it.
Yeah.
I there was one song I didn't really like they sang, which was Ed Sheeran's, what was that song? I'm in Love With Your Body or something like that.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
I didn't like that. I don't like that song, first of all. You know, it's my fiance's favorite song, one of my fiance's favorite songs. But
you better grow to like it.
Exactly. But I like the fact that they talked about the fandom since Discovery came on the air. One of the conversations they had was like, have you done autographs and gotten them tattooed? Doug Jones says he has. He has done that. They sign like a body part and they actually go to a tattoo parlor and get it permanently on their body.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty cool. But the ending, folks, was like Anthony Rapp was wondering, how would a Star Trek musical go about? And they actually played a kind of a Star Trek version of the Seasons of Love from Rent. Yeah, the 525,600.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was, I loved it. And it was great. That part was made the episode. So.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, I liked it as well. Now, I have this in the news segment, but I have to admit I didn't get a chance to watch it or, for that matter, find out who the guest was. So, Wes, I know you have your hand on the pulse of social media, and we've mentioned it before, but tell people about the Facebook group that you run.
It is called Positive Fans of Star Trek Discovery, and we keep it. Unfortunately, right now it's a secret group.
Yeah, yeah.
It's due to the fact that the haters are aware of the group, and they're kind of criticizing it. That was the reason why I got a pulse of social media. Yes.
Yeah.
So this week's guest in the Ready Room was Anthony Rapp.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. So
and how was and that? Did you get to watch it?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
But if you have, I know this for a fact. I found this out this afternoon, actually. If you have CBS All Access,
yes,
they have put the previous episodes up on their on the Discovery page.
Yes,
so you can watch it on your wherever you watch CBS All Access.
Yes, and it's also on YouTube as well. Now I don't know if that is geo-blocked. The one thing that originally I know I posted a link to it on the Star Trek Discovery page on Facebook, which was geo-blocked for international users. But the Star Trek page is not geo-blocked, or at least it wasn't last week. So you can get to it there. But it was posted on CBS All Access. It was posted on YouTube. And it's available on the Star Trek page as well as Star Trek Discovery. But if you're going to go anywhere, I would say look at it on the Facebook page or, for that matter, YouTube. But I think they're released on YouTube later. So whereas you actually can watch the one on Facebook live So.
Yeah. And, I also want to mention the fact is too, the CBS, game show, Let's Make a Deal had a Star Trek episode this week.
Yes. Oh, was it on?
It was on. It aired on Monday.
Okay.
But it has, actually one of the, contestants is actually a fellow Star Trek podcaster, John Kerkorian.
So I didn't realize it was on. I thought it was going to be on in a couple of months or something. So
no,
it was on this month. Okay.
It was on this week. It was, it aired on Monday and it's available on demand on CBS All Access. So, I watched it and like I said, John Kerkorian, he runs, a Star Trek podcast called the Trek Profiles.
Trek Profiles.
And he was a contestant. So.
Cool.
He was there and he did that. It was taped back in September, I want to think, in the fall.
Yeah.
And yeah, it had a guest on the show, Mary Chifo.
Oh, okay.
So it's a lot of fun. It was great to see a lot of Trekkies play Let's Make a Deal.
Yeah.
So
now normally I wouldn't ask this, but since you have your hand on the pulse of things, is there any other like news item for this week that's worth mentioning here that I didn't write down?
I don't think so. I really don't think so. Other than the fact that, you know, about the Picard series, but that's not
like,
relevant to this.
Well, yeah, there was an interview that he did on Yahoo that he talked about, and he said that it's designed for three seasons. He didn't say that it was going to be three seasons, but that it was designed to be. So I'm very much looking forward to that. I can't wait for that. You know, hopefully it'll be out before the end of the year.
Yeah.
And, I can't wait for it.
I can't wait for it either. Yeah. And I just watched a clip from the Graham Norton show. He was on the show recently and he talked a little bit about it. And he mentioned the fact that he's a co-executive producer of that show.
Yeah.
So, and he always mentioned this about, you know, being on Next Gen after he got cast in the role of Picard, that they tried to make him, do the opening monologue with a French accent. They tried it once and it's hilarious. If you ever see him try it, it's hilarious. So
these are the voyages
anyway. Of the Starship Enterprise.
That would be terrible.
It would have been terrible.
All right. That's it. So just so you all know, to submit your feedback and connect with us, there are many different ways of doing so. You can it's back up now. Go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. We're there. You can leave text or audio, use the SpeakPipe widget, call 304-837-2278. And I should mention, if I have missed anything this week, I am terribly sorry. We will cover it next week. One way that we are getting our voicemails, and it always works, you don't have to worry about the website, is our email address, which is StarTrekGSM@gmail.com. And I want to say to all the people that have joined in the past week or so, we have gotten a lot of new people that have joined our Facebook group. So for all of you, I say this. Good old Price is Right. Anyway, that URL is facebook.com/groups/StarTrekDiscoveryPodcast. You can reach us on Twitter. That's at StarTrekGSM. And you can also help us out by sharing when we post on Facebook, or specifically our Facebook page, the Golden Spiral Media page. Those links are available to you to share, but because we're a closed group on Facebook, you can't actually share the links that you see within the group. They're just basically for members of the group. Small, but loyal and active. I would say not as active as your group, Wes.
Oh no, of course but, not. It's like, and my group is like, I don't know, probably like 100 times the size of yours.
Yeah. And it's kind of funny because your Facebook group is huge, where mine is not, but I think we have more listeners than you. So
yeah, of course.
That's temporary though. You will catch up and surpass us. But anyway, there are other ways that you can help. For example, we are the sole podcast for Star Trek Discovery in the TV Time app. So you can find us there. Our episodes are posted with the episode. That's actually one of the first things you see. If you scroll down into the reactions for each episode, you'll see our podcast there. It doesn't look like you can comment anymore, but if you comment and we catch it, you know, we will mention you. But, you know, just I look for comments on there about us, but haven't seen any yet this season yet. But other ways to support us, you can support going to goldenspiralmedia.com/apple, and that's a way to find all of the podcasts within the Golden Spiral Media Network. If you use Apple Podcasts or iTunes on the PC or Mac, I don't know how many people use that anymore, but you can leave us a rating or review. And if you use any other podcast client like Stitcher, I know Podcast Republic allows you to leave ratings and reviews. That's always good to help get the word out about us. And other ways to support the network can be found at goldenspiralmedia.com/support. The Walking Dead talkthrough will be coming back next week. Mark and I, my host on that show, will be recording that episode for the mid-season premiere, which I've already seen because it was available early on AMC Premiere. But we will record our episode for that on Tuesday, like we normally do. And I believe Mark will be taking over editing, either Mark or Kyle. I won't be. I mentioned the DS9 roundtable I was on with Trek FM last week. So you can hear me on there as well. The next episode is season 2, episode 5, which we know the title. It's called Saints of Imperfection. And like Wes was saying, this, we believe, is the last episode of the Gretchen De Berg, Aaron Harbert's show running. We don't know who it's written or directed by, and there is a trailer that we see, and we know that Giorgio will be back. I think so will Tyler, and I don't know what else is on that in that trailer. Oh, of course, we're going to see, you know, the continuing stuff with Tilly. And one thought that I had is they were going to impregnate Tilly and make Culber somehow come back that way.
I heard that theory too.
Yeah,
I think it's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. In fact, I think that whole pregnancy thing was just some hater thing, probably just trying to poke fun at her weight because, you know, she's plus size. I think she's absolutely beautiful and wonderful, and she's young enough to be my daughter, so I'm not going to say anything kind of more than that, but I think she's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that was a bunch of hogwash.
Yeah, and that all started like last season, actually. I think it started roughly about episode 13 of my favorite episode, What's Past Is Prologue.
Yeah.
So, and it's been, you know, that way ever since, you know, and I love Mary Wiseman. I think she's the biggest bright spot for me in Discovery, other than Sumiko Martin Green, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. The whole cast is phenomenal, but I love Mary Wiseman first and foremost.
And she has very much been front and center this season so far. I mean,
which is a good thing.
Yeah, she has had a big role in every episode so far. There's been like a plot thing mm-hmm. to her, or she's been, you know, heavily involved. And yeah, I thought it was a little bit too much that first episode. But I've had no problems with her at all since then. And actually going back and watching the premiere again, I'm not as tough on it. I think she's been great. I'm hoping that May is trying to make Tilly a better person or something. And it's not anything malevolent, but we'll see.
Yeah, definitely. And I guess there was a shot of the Discovery halfway in the Mysterio network. And And someone had commented on a different thread. Someone said Star Trek Discovery into darkness. Because It was in the water, and it kind of reminded him about the Enterprise rising up out of the water in the opening season of that movie. So,
yeah. All right. Well, that's it for this episode. So until next time, I'm Brian.
I'm Wes.
And I want to say thank you so much, Wes, for guest hosting this week. Did a fantastic job. I definitely will not hesitate. I did not hesitate when Ruthie said that she couldn't make it. I said, I'm going to see if Wes can do it. So thank you so much for, you know, doing this on very short order. You know, so I really appreciate it. But how can people get a hold of you?
You can find the Facebook page by going to facebook.com/MNStarTrekNerdPod. You can also follow the podcast on Twitter. Just follow the handle MINNSTNerdPod. You can also support me on Patreon by going to patreon.com/MNStarTrekNerdPod.
All right, thanks. With that, I say peace and long life.
Live long and prosper.